Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
The NBA is trying to do what it's never done before. It's trying to play its season in a bubble. Hearing a lot of scuttlebutt about what the NBA might do moving forward as it pertains to maybe creating mini bubbles around the country where presumably like the Utah Jazz, Denver Nuggets, Trailblazers, Thunder would be in this mini bubble in their region of the country. And then they play against each other. And then, of course, other bubbles are created nationally. But in the meantime, they're going to try to finish this 2019-2020 season. One of our fine interns that has been really doing a nice job amid a pandemic being an intern, that's not an easy thing to do because you're not in person, don't have your thumb on top of the interns, but Adam Sussman is one of our interns. He has been tasked with looking at the NBA and sort of the must-see games in the early part of this bubble. He's joining us now. How are you, man? Where are you? What is you're not where anywhere we can see you. Where are you right now?
Well, you know, for the internship, I was supposed to be in Portland, but right now I'm in the same apartment I lived all through the school year. Just me and one roommate. The NBA can't come soon enough, man. I mean, I'm 21 now. We all know you talk about a lot. Betting's legal in Oregon now. I like to think myself as somewhat of an expert for a college student, but
okay.
Betting $10 on every game might not be the best for me, but hopefully some of my perceived expertise can help.
All right. You have been looking at sort of the NBA games that have been played, games that will be played. What are you most excited about seeing? What are some of the must-see games that are on the horizon here?
Well, before I go into the games, people are kind of just writing these off as write-offs, essentially, before the playoffs actually start. There's still a lot of movement left, especially in the West. I mean, Dallas is the 7th seed with 40 wins, and the Nuggets are the 3 seed with 43 wins. And then, obviously, the Blazers, the Pelicans, and the Kings are all 3.5 games back of the Grizzlies for the 8. So the movement, not so much in the East, but in the West, there's still a lot to be happening. Top games. I highlighted 5. Most of them are in the Western Conference because, obviously, for Portland fans' sake,
yep,
for just general movement, that's where the action is. Dallas versus Houston. I guess I should have saved this game for last because this is one of my favorites. I feel like the fan perception of what Houston is, of being this best offensive team in the league, three-point obsessed, is actually what Dallas is. If I ask the general fan who has the best offense in the NBA, they're going to say Houston, Lakers, Milwaukee. It is the Mavericks, and the Mavericks by far. They have an NBA best 115.8 offensive ranking, and that number may mean nothing to you or me, but to put some context to that, Houston is second at 113.4, and the Wizards are 13th at 111.1. So the jump from second to first is bigger than the jump from 13th to second. So for clear reasons, this game is so fun because you have the second best team in the league versus the first best team in the league. And Dallas is the only team in the NBA who's made over 1,000 threes. I know Portland fans are familiar with Seth Curry. He's doing what he did last year and more this year in Dallas. I mean, talk about a lucky guy. Last year he got to play with Damian Lillard. This year he's playing with 21-year-old sensation Luka Doncic, who's got 29-9-9 this year. And, I mean, I can throw out all the fancy numbers in the world of net rating, true shooting percentage, offensive rebound percentage. I mean, this is James Harden versus Luka Doncic. What more could you ask for? It's the best, two of the best players in the NBA, probably third and fourth in MVP ranking right now behind Giannis and LeBron. But for Houston, it's interesting because their season is hard to sum up. It needs to be kind of cut in half before and after the Clint Capella trade. After that, they went to the famous small ball lineup where their traditional power forward, P.J. Tucker, is now their center. So their tallest guy on the floor is a 6'7 center. They're going to be playing Dallas, who has a 7'2 power forward in Kristaps Porzingis and a 7-foot center in Maxi Kleba. So the size differential in this game is fascinating as is. Media fans, even myself, I go back and forth on how successful this small ball thing can actually be for Houston. When they started, they went 8-2. It was amazing. Russell Westbrook went back to his MVP form. He was putting up triple-doubles left and right. Covington, a player they got in the Clint Capella trade, who played small forward his entire career, looked like he was a man reborn when he went to power forward. And they were defending well. But then the last five games before the cancellation in the NBA, they went 1-4. They turned the ball over more than anybody, second worst in the league in assist-to-turnover ratio, and they couldn't rebound for anything. They had the worst offensive rebound percentage and the second worst defensive rebounding percentage. So in terms of just how you're going to stop bigs and then how you're going to grab rebounds, it's very prevalent for them right now. And they lost to teams like the Knicks and Charlotte. So it wasn't pretty losses either.
All right, let me stop you right there. Adam Sussman is with us. He's one of the interns here on the Bald Faced Truth radio show. I charged him with talking about the NBA and looking at the NBA. One of the keys to radio, Adam, and you know this, we got to be entertaining too. You got all the data, but let me just ask you, I give you a $10 bet. Let's just say, hypothetically, I'm not doing this for all the interns, I give you a $10 wager on a team to win the NBA championship. You can't pick the Milwaukee Bucks. You can't pick the Clippers or Lakers. Who do you bet on?
That's tough. Obviously, those three are definitely ahead of the pack. I would have to look out east. As much as pains me to say, I'm from Chicago, I'm a Bulls fan, but I think the Boston Celtics are very, very interesting. If they can get Gordon Hayward back to what he was before he had that hand injury, they have three wings that can switch everything. And you've seen the highest level of basketball. We've seen what the finals look like, what the conference finals look like. It's all about matchups. Boston has that. Kemba Walker, he's had knee struggles. It may be arthritic. We don't know. But if he can come back to what he was at the beginning of the season, and Jason Tatum, he was playing like a top 10 player in the NBA before the break. Jaylen Brown isn't that far behind that. He can be a top 20 player. And if Gordon Hayward can facilitate and be 75% of what he was in Utah, they're very dangerous. The only fear is they don't really have a center. But if you look in the Eastern Conference, the only team that has that dominating center is the Philadelphia 76ers. And the 76ers are a decent shout for this as well, but I wouldn't be surprised. They're a team that can lose in the first round or make it to the NBA Finals. I think a lot of people's answer to this question would be Toronto, but Pascal Siakam has fallen off a little bit. Kyle Lowry is still an excellent player, don't get me wrong, but the raw numbers aren't there. He still takes a 1,000 charges a game. It's insane. But no Kawhi Leonard's going to hurt. He's in L.A., obviously. So just with the three wings that Boston has, I think it's more dangerous than the other team. I think the East is a little bit easier to come out of as well.
We're talking to intern Adam here on the Bald Faced Truth radio show. What is life like in Eugene? You say you're on campus in your apartment. Like, how different is it maybe versus other summers versus, you know, how often are you hanging out with people or seeing people? How scared are people about the virus?
So I was in the elevator the other day with, like, the manager of my building. I said, how full is it? And he said, probably 25%. Most of the kids have gone home. It's like that in summer usually, but I walk every day. I don't see very many people at all. The only attraction in Eugene right now is the new Hayward Field is essentially finished. So that's a spectacle to be seen for people to go out. I play soccer with a couple of buddies every day. But other than that, man, it's pretty quiet. And when everything started to reopen, it got a little scary because bars were packed, man. I mean, I'm a 21-year-old, so I may be a little hypocritical. But 18 through 22 were some of the most naive, dumbest age group in the world when it comes to this coronavirus.
True. I'm not arguing with you there. Can you talk sense to your friends? Like, if you're out, I guess if you're out, they're going, you're out too, you idiot. But if you're out, could you say to people, hey, maybe we shouldn't be here, or do they look at you like you're nuts?
I'm not really going to restaurants or bars, so I can't talk to those kids, but I play soccer with about 8 people, and I'm relatively close with them. But at the end of the day, there's still a lot of trust between us. When we play soccer, you can't wear a mask because you might pass out. But other than that, talking sense into people. I mean, John, you got a lot more talking power than I do with these kids. I'm a 21-year-old who looks 18, so it might be a little bit harder for me. But in terms of my roommates, we have held each other accountable. There's only one right here, one in my apartment right now, and we kind of talk to each other where we've been. If we're going out to a restaurant, masks on, obviously. You can't go anywhere in public without a mask. And I know on your show yesterday, you were in a convenience store, a gas station, someone didn't wear a mask and kind of gave them a dirty look. And that's kind of the same for me. Stores and restaurants, you have done a good job of not letting people in if they don't have a mask. Lane County in general, throughout this all, has been one of the more dependable counties in holding their citizens accountable.
Talking to intern Adam here on the Bald Faced Truth radio show. Blazers fans are interested to see Yusuf Nurkic. Damian Lillard's always a wild card with a chip on his shoulder. Do the Blazers have a chance to rattle around in here and make it interesting, or do you write them off as a team in this bubble?
So I think of the three teams that are the 9, 10, 11, Sacramento, Pelicans, and Portland. Portland's the best team there. But you got to look at the schedule. I don't know how many Portland fans have looked at the Pelicans' schedule, but if you compare it to Portland's, I mean, it's ridiculous. Portland has to face some of the best teams in the NBA. And then the Pelicans, sure, they have to face the Clippers, but their last four games are against four teams with a losing record. And these are all supposed to be teams that are playoff hopefuls. They face the Grizzlies, the Kings, the Wizards, or essentially a G League team at this point with no Brad Beal or Davis Bertans and the Spurs. So I think Portland, with getting Zach Collins and Nurkic back, is going to be very, very helpful, obviously. And Nurkic surprised me. I don't know if you watched the scrimmage, but Nurkic, he was banging up with Ibaka. But the big game, and this is one of the games I highlighted, Portland versus Memphis this Friday. I'm sure you'll be talking about it on the show all week, but I mean, I don't think I need to tell your listeners how important this is, especially because Portland, at the end, this is going to be their easiest game, and they still have to defend John Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. I know Memphis is a small market, so not everybody was able to watch, but they are the eight for a reason. Let me preface this by saying I love Zach Collins. I think the switchability he can offer on defense and the ability to space the floor on offense is very valuable going forward. I think what a 20-year-old Jaren Jackson Jr. is right now is what Zach Collins' ceiling is. Jaren Jackson Jr. is a player that nobody talks about. He should already be second-team all-defense in the NBA. And I don't think there's ever been a better pick-and-roll between two 20-year-olds than with John Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. ever before in the NBA. I mean, that's partially because Stockton and Malone stayed a little bit longer in college, but point being said, even though this is the Trailblazers' easiest game, they still have a lot to handle with that pick and roll. And no Ariza for Portland, that's tough. I kind of want your opinion on this as well. Who on Portland is going to be defending the talented wings? Because they're going to be playing Boston. They're going to be playing the Clippers. Is it Gary Trent Jr.? Is it Nasir Little? Is it Swanigan? Who's defending Kawhi? Who's defending Tatum? Who's defending Jaylen Brown? Because no Ariza, that was your guy for it.
Yep.
I think the starting five made sense once you had Collins back. And I certainly don't trust Melo as a small forward defending the likes of those guys. So I don't know what you think. I don't know what the people back in studio think, but that's going to be Portland's biggest issue, just defending wings.
And I totally understand. And Adam Sussman is our guest intern here on the radio show. Adam, I appreciate you making time for us, and I appreciate all the expertise. And I totally understand sort of the idea that Trevor Ariza solved a problem. When the Blazers got him, it was like, okay, they solved a problem. Then you see, hey, he's not going to play. All of a sudden, the Blazers were right back, even though they had Yusuf Nurkic, even though Zach Collins is coming back. That's all hopeful and good. I immediately said they've got their hands full, and what's the point of being in this bubble? But they're going to play it out, and I love that, you know, they're not there to mess around. I think that'll at least be interesting. But that game is Friday with the Blazers against the Grizzlies. Adam, thank you for doing this. We'll bring it back on and get your take in a couple weeks or so.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on, John.
All right. Adam Sussman, our intern. How did he do? Let's evaluate. Alabama, Adriana, Judah, how did he do? Intern. Let him have it.
I thought it was great. He was new, very knowledgeable, you know, not afraid to let the information fly, which was nice. I mean, I'm an information guy, so I kind of like it. But overall, it's nice to hear his voice, and he's contributed so much to the station, so it's been great.
I'm sad that I haven't had a chance to knock the interns around a little bit and make it tough on them. That's what's really been lacking during this pandemic, you know, making them do work and then saying, I'm glad you did the work. We're not going to use it. That's one of my favorite things to do, just to see, like, you know, how they react to that. But he did the homework here, and so I rewarded him on that. I do think I cut him off there because I think sometimes you can bog people down with too much info. And he was starting to drone a little bit about the info. And I'm not saying it wasn't good info, but you got to present it in a way that's interesting. I had to shake him up a little bit. Alabama, Adriana, how do you do?
Yeah, I appreciate that you did that because all those numbers and stats, they are nice to have, and they do prove whatever point you're trying to make, or they, you know, prove or disprove whatever point you're trying to make. But it was a little bit public speaking to me.
Yeah.
Like book presentation to me, but I think he did well.
Yeah, and I think, look, we've had worse. We've had interns over the year. We put them on air. One comes to mind in particular. We had one young woman who said, I'm not sure if I want to be on sports radio or I want to be a nurse. And we brought her on air. And afterwards, she said, how did I do? And I said, you're going to make a hell of a nurse. All right, leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth statewide. Anna's popping in next. We got the Culligan Water Cooler Report. Anna's popped in the studio. We had a mutual friend tell us the other day that when Anna comes on the show, he believes my voice changes. Do you guys think that's true? Alabama, Adriana, Judah, does my energy or voice change when Anna pops on the show?
I think the energy is much more relaxed and playful, more than formal and, you know, yeah, otherwise.
He said, when Anna comes on, you go into, well, Anna's on the show. like I'm doing some other R&B radio show. Judah, does the energy change?
Yeah, the contrast of both of your voices, it's like puzzle pieces fitting together. It's very nice. It elevates the quality of the airwaves. But I think that's probably what I notice the most is not necessarily your voice changing, John, but when it's juxtaposed right next to your wife's voice. And yeah, you hear a noticeable difference.
On that note, everybody raise a glass. Let's toast to this radio show. No, it's interesting to me because I do feel like the I'm big on energy. And there's a reason. Like Judah, you have a certain energy about you. Adriana's got a certain energy about her. I loved having Adriana when she first joined the show because before she came into the show, we had gone a while without having a female voice on the show, and it's more than a voice, but it was a woman's perspective, a woman's voice. It's just a different voice, energy, age-wise, different age demographic. Anna comes in, same thing, and I think it also gives the listener a chance to know the hell that is my life at home when she comes on the show.
Like, a little window into your world.
Just a glimpse into this world.
That's how you describe it.
No, I'm just messing around. Hey, my intern, how did he do? Did you hear him at all?
I didn't even know that I stepped in and I didn't realize he was an intern. Just caught the tail end of that. So I guess that's a good thing.
He's,
you know, sounding intelligent and pulling that off, that's big for him.
He did well. He has a sweet spot. I made him work like a couple of weeks on this, and he's done a lot of writing for the website and stuff. It's hard right now because normally we'd have eyes on the interns every day, and we'd be giving them something to do every day that would help the show. So right now I have to give them like bigger picture things. I do think my coaching point to him was that there's a segment of the audience that loves the facts and figures, which he was great at. Mm-hmm. He had good energy when he presented it. There were just a couple points where I started to get a little bored.
Yeah.
Because it was too much.
Right.
Too much telling me, you know, about the batting averages and the RBIs and everything, you know, starts to happen when you talk sports. So get out of the box score a little bit. And that's when I asked him, I'd give him a $10 bill. Who would he wager it on? That's like, now put that expertise into practical use.
Right.
Where did you intern as a young TV reporter?
I interned first at KBC in Los Angeles because that's where I was going to college. It was near Pepperdine. And it was great. I mean, I got to witness what a number two market news station operated like. It was insane. They had murders every day. Like at the morning assignment meeting, they would go down the list of, and I don't know if it's still this way, but they would go down the list of murders and pick which murder they were going to cover that day because they couldn't possibly cover them all. And that was jarring.
How did they treat you? Were you treated well? Was there like,
you know, I was just a cog. I was a cog in the wheel. Coolest thing I got to do while interning there was return a Phantom of the Opera mask and cape to Pantages Theater in downtown LA because the morning weather guy had worn it as a bit, and I got to go into the theater and, you know, talk to the stagehands and see how, like, the robotics work and the stage and stuff. That was really cool.
Yeah, that was interesting. So, Did you meet Robert Downey Jr. one time when you were out on a deal?
Well, yes.
Was he a convicted of a crime
he was a resident of Malibu, which is where Pepperdine is, and you know he had some substance abuse issues along the way and was always going to court at Malibu City Municipal Court or something like that. So I would go down there with my SVH camera and
what is that?
Like basically sticking a VCR tape into a video camera and hitting record. And I'd go down there with my microphone and my camera, and I'd, you know, be down there with, like, Entertainment Tonight at Access Hollywood and all the bigwigs interviewing him. I remember my mom got so excited because she saw me, like, ask a question on Access Hollywood or something one time of Robert Downey Jr.
What a weird scene.
It was a weird scene.
Because you have movie stars and everything, and then you just got a bunch. And that was pre-paparazzi, right? Or was there paparazzi already?
That was pretty early. I think it wasn't quite as crazy as it is now, because like, why would you even have access to Robert Downey Jr. right now coming out of court, you know, for some kind of drug offense? That wouldn't happen anymore. You'd be swarmed and shouted down by everybody else. Yeah. But then I interned at K2 here in Portland. I came back the following summer, and I was gonna say, I mean, yes, it's hard right now for interns because you don't see them. But it's also an opportunity because the internship, they have the ability to craft the nature of their internship. They have a lot of autonomy over what they're going to get out of it.
Yeah.
And so I would seize on that opportunity.
Well, I got to give him credit. He was pushing to get on air.
Yeah.
You know, he's one of those kids that just, he wants to be on air and he was pushing. So I said, all right, he said, can I come on air and do that? And I said, well, why don't you study the games that are the must-watch games and I'll bring you on right before the games start. And then literally I waited, because I will do this, waited to see if he would take the initiative to follow up. And he did.
Yeah.
So then I said, okay, you come on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And then he said, okay, how does this work? And, you know, he's interned before. I did not intern. I did not have an internship anywhere.
Yeah, you just started working when you were like 16 years old.
Yeah, I started working. And I got on the job and I looked around and I figured it out. I really do envy the kids like you who had a plan. What would you say to parents who have kids who want to do internships, or maybe kids out there that are listening that are college aged and going, all right, should I get a job and work at Dutch Bros or should I go get an internship?
Not even college age. I mean, I would say if your family can afford it, to, you know, if you can do both, great. Work a part-time job, but also do something that propels you toward what you kind of think you want to do. Like, don't go to the opposite end of the spectrum and, like, work in retail if you know that that's not even close to a field that you want to do. And for myself, like, my mom, sure, we could have used the money if I had worked a part-time job. We also ran the motel. But for us, it made a lot more sense for me to go and do activities that had to do with journalism, because I already kind of knew that's where I was headed, and do community activities and leadership activities during summer breaks and even during the school year, because my goal was to get a full ride scholarship, which at the time was worth about $200,000, $250,000 for the place that I wanted to go. So when we did the math, we said, you know, that investment of time toward hopefully getting a scholarship was going to have a much better return on investment than a minimum wage job with money that I was probably going to blow.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.